What's up, my drinking comrades, and welcome to another episode of the Beverage Click podcast, dedicated to the discussion surrounding beverages with an Asian perspective. I'm your resident host, Sean Oh, co-founder of the Beverage Click Academy, and our HQ is based in Singapore. Now, however, for this special episode, we are recording off-site in the prestigious Burnt Ends. So really happy to be here, and I miss the food. So one fine day, I'll be back here again for your food. But, you know, today we are on official business. Podcast recording, obviously. Now, before we get into the interview, to bring education value to our listeners who are still studying for their respective beverage programs, I will start the session with a flashcard question and we will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. So do stay tuned. Now, this month's question will be sake related. Now, here it goes. What is the most significant purpose of creating shubo? I repeat. What is the most significant purpose for creating shubo? Now remember to stay tuned for the answer at the end of the episode. Now let's start our interview proper. Now today we have with two guests. So this is our very first three-way panel. And both guests are from very reputable F&B establishments, so I'm really glad to have them here. Some might even say that reputable might be an understatement. First up, we have Miss Nicole Roche.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Who has been in the industry for about 7 years. Currently, she is the beverage director of Appetite, which is a new concept by the talented team of Michelin star Nuri. Besides Nuri, she has also worked in another Michelin star restaurant, White Grass. Apart from service, she was also the brand manager of Dispatcher that had helped market brands such as Aviation Gin and the Lover's Rum. Now, at the other corner, we have Mr. Neil Claudio, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yep, it's all correct. Pleasure to meet you.
Good, good. And he's a sommelier of the very famed Burnt Ends. And at the time of this podcast, Burnt Ends is currently number 34 of World's 50 Best Restaurant. So fantastic. great job there. So it's really wonderful to be recording here. Now, before this, he has also worked across many acclaimed restaurants from the likes of Beyond Frenzen, Black Sheep Restaurants, as well as the American Club in Hong Kong. Now, both individuals are fellow Beverage Click alumni, having certifications between them spanning across the Whiskey Ambassador Program, WSET Level 3 in wine, as well as Kiki Sakeshi and Certified Sake Sommelier that are all conferred by the SSI and SSA. It's great having you both on air, and how's it going?
Well, so far pretty good. I mean, a little bit nervous, but at the same time, with a little bit of some sake, we're all pretty good over here.
Yeah, we had some sake to kind of loosen up the tension, so I suppose this is fine.
Absolutely, and super excited to be on this podcast. Thank you so much, Sean.
Great, great. Now, you know, I'm sure the listeners would like to know more about both of you, so here's how it's going to go. We're going to start with a little bit more about your backstory and behind what you're actually doing. So, let's start with a lady first, okay?
Thank you.
With Nicole. So, you know, how did you kind of stumble into this trade and profession?
I think stumble is definitely the right word. I've been in this trade for as long as I can remember. So I grew up in Australia, and back then my family had a food van. We also loved hosting guests. And so you can imagine that young kid traveling around in Australia, working at all of these amazing food festivals and meeting really, really interesting people. I always loved cooking for people and also sharing a good drink, cocktails, wines, sometimes sake.
Okay.
When I moved back to Singapore, that was around like so 2015. I worked at a couple of different restaurants, so casual, a little bit of fine dining, and I spent 2 years working in distribution across Asia Pacific. We did, as Sean has mentioned, the Lover's Rum, Aviation Gin, just to get my hands dirty in the back scenes. But my real passion started in 2016 when we opened up Nuri. Nuri is a one Michelin star restaurant, and I was so impressed by the work of my predecessor, Matthew Chan. He had an 8 sake spread of sakes from all over the region, as well as loads of orange wines and interesting quality sparkling wines, which was just life-changing. I never stopped learning since.
Great, great. Well, that's a bit of a shout-out to Matthew. Matthew, if you're hearing us. And Matthew Chan is also a Beverage Club alumni. You know, one fine day, we'll probably get him on board.
You should.
What's he doing? Right now, he's like, what, brew
beer? I think
beer?
Pan Pacific.
Pan Pacific.
Like, the guy travels all around, and honestly, wherever he goes, he touches it, turns it into gold.
Okay, well, hopefully he touches my stuff and it turns to gold as well. And moving on to Neil, you've been around as well. You've been in Hong Kong and you've been in Singapore. So how's it been like for you? How did you stumble into the trade?
Well, for me, it started as a part-time job. Like, I was back in working in the banking industry, and then I was just like, hey, you know what? Let's do a little bit of like part-time job, because I was still studying for my associate degree for business back then in Hong Kong. And so eventually my boss was like, you know, why don't you change full-time? I was like, no, you know, it's not me. I can't talk to people and I don't know stuff about F&B. So I said, well, just give it a try. And then eventually I found myself trapped, you know, in a good way. I'm inside a trade already. So it was like, how do you say, 2016 when it started to go like really crazy. And then going to 2017, I started to take wine really serious about it, because it's always like a famous story from my chef. So he did ask me like back then, do you want to become a general manager in the future, or do you want to become a sommelier? I told him I want to become a general manager. There's no way I'm going to study about wines, because it's so difficult. There's so much things to study about. And at the end of the day, it's like, perfect. Tomorrow you start becoming a sommelier. And I was just like, why did you ask me the question again? I just wanted to be sure. But yeah, starting tomorrow, you're going to become a sommelier. So eventually took a lot of like wine courses and so on. And then I was working for a front end at that time, and then learned a lot of things from there. And then eventually I found myself over here in Singapore. And yeah. How do you say it? Like, it's just too hot over here, but at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, it's almost the same like Hong Kong, like in terms of like how fast the pace goes and so on. But yeah, a lot of friendly people over here.
Right,
I've got a trick for you. Glass of champagne, ice cold, sunset, life-changing.
Yeah, that always works. But it never works for me. It's always raining. Somehow rather, Singapore rains all the time these days. So it gets to me. Is that really just more of how Hong Kong is different for you between Singapore and Hong Kong?
Like, in terms of like consumer, it can be a little bit more different, because like in Hong Kong, somehow we have like so-called four seasons and so on. So like the drinks will be a little bit more different. So that was the time that I didn't have like any form of like heater for my sake. So I had to go and use the coffee machine steamer just to steam something.
No.
Like sake froth it in a way.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, you know what? Just do this thing. I was like, I never even knew about like, you know, sake being served warm and so on. But people were like, you know, if you're in Japan, we do this kind of things and so on. I was like, oh, okay, that's something that I would like to know more about. But then again, after I came back here to Singapore, it's like I rarely get the chance to drink warm sake or whatever. It's more, you know, it's pretty much tropical over here.
Yep.
So it's mostly like cold sakes and so on. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're here nonetheless. Back to Nicole again, because you mentioned that you were a brand manager, right, for distribution side. So how different was it, you know, when you're doing distribution work as well as in comparison to service? Was it really, you know, different in terms of experience? Was it good? Was it bad?
Wow, a million times so and more. I think at the end of the day, I've always just loved people and interaction and learning about people. So that doesn't change regardless of which part of the industry you're in. But you do look at the industry from another side, instead of being the one making the drinks and making amazing cocktails or sharing it with many 50 odd new guests every day. You are talking to your mates. Oh my gosh, it's starting to rain. Just what you said, Sean.
Yeah, I know in Singapore it never just rains, it pours.
Yes, exactly. Time to get out some Negronis. So when it comes to distribution, I think you tend to look at things a lot more analytically. It's a lot more apparent who your competitors are and where they stand. Whereas when you're in the restaurant, it's all about hosting guests. It's about creating a beautiful evening or afternoon for these two now to 10 people. Rules have changed, but finally. And making a wonderful moment with them.
Good, good. Yeah, I can fully appreciate, all that experience that you had, because previously, just you know, to give a little bit of context, I was also in the service line for quite a bit.
And then SQ boy, right?
Yeah. I was, you know, SIE boy, or what do you call it? Singapore girl? No, that would be
Singapore girl.
No, I'm a boy, so a Singapore boy. But yeah, so I can fully understand that. I did a little bit of distribution as well, and now in education, so fully appreciate your journey. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your current restaurants, where you're at. So, Nicole, could you tell us a little bit more about Appetite?
Absolutely. I think the story really begins with Nori, and you can't talk about Nori without mentioning Ivan. Ivan is chef and owner, Ivan Brem, and he is the most eclectic brain that you've ever met. So he opened Nori in 2016, and we serve what we call crossroads cuisine. So hear me out. This is a crossroads means the moments in history where people have met through trade, war, or just opportunity. And when we meet as cultures, we share ideas as well as inspire each other's in terms of cooking, personalities, winemaking, especially with spirits. Those moments have affected today's society as well as food culture. And Nori aims to highlight that with every single dish we serve. Appetite, which we opened 1.5 years ago, is the research hit. So if I can say it simply, Nori is crossroads cooking, whilst Appetite is crossroads thinking. We have a vinyl lounge, about 3,000 records there, an art lounge, which showcases amazing works. Currently, we're featuring the works of Robert Mapletop, very influential photographer, died in 89, but it's the first time ever that his works are being showcased in a solo exhibition in Asia, and we're really fortunate to do that. In addition to that, but also an omakase kitchen experience where you sit right in front of the chef and see the magic and the mystery behind the works that you have. And the wine list is pretty darn cool too.
Cool. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about wine list in a bit. And I think I'm definitely due for a visit. I've been to Nuri a couple of times, so, Appetite, yep. Sign me up one day.
What's taking you so long?
Yep, well soon. And on to Neil for Burnt Ends. Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about Burnt Ends. I'm sure it doesn't really need introduction, but please.
Yeah, I mean, how do you say a lot? So it's actually a small restaurant back then in Chinatown. So we just recently relocated to a location where it's like literally, let's say maybe 2 or 3 times the size. So back then in the previous place, we had like everything jammed in. But here we've got an equal spread of everything. So like for the restaurant itself, we like to work a lot with wood fire. So that's what the chef wants it to be. So there's no gas or whatsoever. So it's all wood fire. So like everything has an influence of smoke. So for example, like we smoke like a quail egg itself, or maybe the cream has a bit of like smoke into it and so on. So that's something that the chef wants to showcase to the people over here. It's like anything is possible with wood fire. We cook like seafood, we cook vegetables, we cook meats and so on. So like in terms of like steaks, I think it's probably one of the best steaks I've ever tried. I mean, I'm not being biased towards the restaurant, but here when I see how the work is done, there's like a lot more like longer resting time for how the meats are prepared, and there's so much more to technique, a lot of like scientific things going on, which I didn't really understand before until I came into this restaurant. I was just like, how is it possible that we can cook this kind of stuff, just using wood fire? But then again, a lot of magic happens in a restaurant and so on. So the chef himself, is Australian, but people tend to think that I'm also Australian as well at the same time.
You got the accent, yeah, almost, coming there.
So people always comment, oh, there's only 2 Australians in this place. It's going to be you and the chef. So the chef would be like, yeah, you know what? He's from the east, I'm from the western part where a lot of things happen. It's like, what chef? There's only Margaret River in that place. But then again, you can have all the credit. A lot of things are happening in the east and so on. So it's always like that, but it's a fun place to be at Burnt Ends.
Right. It gives trial by fire a whole different mission, I think. Very, very cool. I love these both of these restaurants. And both these restaurants have a really good crafted beverage list. And, I believe it's all credit to both of you. So let's talk a little bit more about the restaurant's beverage list. In terms of philosophy, let's start again with Nicole. In terms of philosophy, so how is it structured? Are there any unique selling points? Take it away.
Yeah. Our beverage list is very much in line with the restaurant's cuisine. We want to highlight the human element of wine, the people behind it, the cultures behind it, and locations that it comes from. Nori's List is a lot more accessible. So your whites are where you want them to be, your reds are where you want them to be. And each glass or bottle that you have enhances the food, enhances the dining experience. While at Appetite, we're, again, very focused on research and development. So we focus on producers. Each page highlights a single producer, at what they do, as well as if they do anything. We have particular winemakers who are also gin makers, also whiskey makers, and make an eau de vie, and we will carry everything because we want to support these small guys, share their story. One of my favorite ones is, I'm not sure if I can mention brands, but this is such a good wine, so I'm just going to say it, Beau Passage, amazing Japanese winemaker, truly just stunning the works that he comes out with, and we carry their whites, their oranges, and their reds, and are always begging for more and more of their bottles because they're so limited.
Great. I'm expecting a glass from you when I visit.
No glass of champagne, just a glass of Beau Passage. Okay. Got it. I'll write that down.
Yeah, got it. What about for Brent Ends, philosophy, structure, and you know, any unique selling points?
It's going to be a hard question to answer, but I'm here anyway to answer those questions.
Yes, so, yes.
So for the wine list itself, it's going to be 90% Australian still wines. So basically, the chef, as I mentioned, is Australian. And we want to showcase that Australia has pretty, how do you say, like a diverse kind of like grape varietals and so on. So you can grow Cabernet, you can grow like Silicone, like Shiraz, maybe a Pinot from somewhere, or maybe all of those like Italian varieties as well, which is making quite the new changes in, how to say, this country right now, because like people would always say, you know, there's only Pinot Grigio in Italy. But every time I would tell them, you know, there's Pinot Grigio inside of Australia, they're like, no way. But that's just showcase like how versatile Australia is and so on. Like Australia is so big, Western Australia going to the East, it's a total, how to say, different kind of story and so on. So like in terms of like how we do the listings over here, we arrange it according to like flavor profile. Because like for me, it's just like old school wine lists will always give you like producers, like chateaus or whatsoever. But here we are more like to taste. So we arrange it from the lightest intensity going to medium to full. Same goes with like the cocktail listings, the spirit listings, the sake listings. That's how we arrange it over here. And then for unique selling points, how do you say it? Like, I'm just going to say it's all Australian and so on. But then again, people always have this kind of judgment that, you know, Australia doesn't make really good Pinots. But every time I open a bottle, like, well, you know what, this is a Pinot Noir, but just try it, it might be Burgundy. And then they'll be, oh yeah, this is Burgundy. And then I open the bottle, welcome to Geelong and Victoria. Where it's like, the wines are made pretty well, and the style can almost recreate Burgundy. So like, if you ask me, ever since I came into this restaurant, where we've been selling more Pinot Noirs than Cabernet, than how it was before. Because I think it just shows like, the palate is changing, you know, people want something a bit more elegant, something a bit more balanced into it, which I think somehow, you know, Pinot is pretty agile. You can have it from the start to finish. You don't have to go like too heavy at the same time from there. And then if I had to change something, I'm probably going to get murdered by the chef, but but I'm probably going to put a bit more of like wines from all over the world and so on, but maybe okay. Just a select few, but we never know where it gets to us and so on, but there's something in my head, but who knows, maybe 5-10 years time, we can do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can be adventurous with that, you never know. And you know, the thing about Australian Pinots, that's the one true wine that I'm in love with. So I totally feel you. So
For sure, the value that you get on those wines,
absolutely. And bring it upon, you know, the point of free reign. If you had something that you could change, Nicole, on your list.
Well, so it's a little bit different. I have free reign with the wireless.
Okay. Lucky you.
Hashtag no pressure. But I'm also supported by the best team anyone could ask for. So our beverage team is 4-man strong. We've got Wyman, Dylan, and Ivan himself, as well as me. And we are constantly working on new things. We're constantly developing our beverage list and developing ourselves as well as our team. We want everyone to be part of the experience. The goal of the restaurant is you can ask the chef, hey, this dish is amazing. What should I drink with it? And they will be able to give you at least their personal preference of wine, knowing full well whether or not it's available by the glass or by the bottle, and what it tastes like. So we're always drinking and sharing beverages together, not getting drunk, unfortunately, 10:30 rules, but hopefully that changes soon. We have, Appetite especially, has an upcoming menu in the works, and this is something I'm super excited for. It will be launched very, very soon in the next few months, and definitely both of you get an invite for this launch. And without giving too much away, we want this list to focus on particular grapes. About maybe 8 to 10 grapes that have traveled the entire world, and why, how, the people that have brought them. Let's have some fun into history.
Okay, good. Well, I'm waiting for the invite. And I mean, at the time of this recording, well, we have kind of opened up, right?
Today!
Yes, exactly. So no more 10:30.
This is so exciting.
Yeah, unfortunately for the service staff, you guys got to work longer hours though.
We can still drink, so that's fine.
Exactly. Okay, yes.
So you have to take the good with the bad at the end of the day. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So there is
for any customer, please pour a glass of wine for your servers and chefs.
Oh, lucky you. I didn't get to ask your preferences in beverage though. So, you know, tell me a little bit more about which is your true preference. You know, I've talked about Pinots from Australia being my one true calling. What about Nicole? You know, do you prefer wine, spirits, or even sake?
I don't discriminate. Oh. I love them all. Like, I'm a very fair lover, so every glass has a particular hour, a particular moment. You can start with sake in the morning or a cocktail, then you can move on to wine, then a good Barolo, end with a little bit of whiskey, and then somehow splatter some water in between. I heard that was a good idea.
Right. Well, that's a really diplomatic answer, but I'm sure lots of people love you for that, especially if you have a Japanese boyfriend. Having sake in the morning, fantastic. what about you?
I would probably say the same thing, almost the same thing as Nicole, you know, because there's always like a mood for something, you know, like when you're drinking, when you're eating or whatever, it's always going to be different. But if I had to choose that something that, you know, like out of nowhere, I'm just going to be like, you know, just give me a Negroni. Mm. You know what? It's just like my go-to kind of drink. Hey, you know what? This is something I can drink before, in between, or after. Because like every time I have Negroni, it's either I'm really hammered or I'm just getting started.
Neil, we need to hang out more.
It's always like the case from there. It's like, you know, we just finish like a few bottles of wine and you go, hey, just a Negroni for the road. So you know what? Why not?
That's the one that usually gets me drunk. But again, I digress. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good to know of your preferences. I've got another question about sake. Since it has a sake theme for this podcast, most people assume that sake is only for Japanese restaurants. How would your team or your restaurant actually integrate that within your concept? So I know, for example, both of your restaurants do have a little bit of that sake element. So maybe, you know, Nicole would like to share first with you.
Yeah, for sure. Since Nori opened, we've always had an extensive sake list. And till today, we offer a full-on sake pairing for our 7 and 5 course menus at Nori. At Appetite, we do a mixed beverage pairing. So that means when you're stepping through our doors, you're having the entire experience. And if you opt for the pairing, you get some sake, some cocktails, some spirits, and definitely lots of wine. Because there is always a perfect match. And a very good match for anything that you're eating and where you're having it in the meal.
Mm. Oh, well, that's a jolly way to pair with food. What about you, Neil?
Well, our restaurant is, how do you say it? It's a little bit hard to answer that question. How do you say it? Because like, when I came in over here, the sake listing wasn't that much. So I was like, you know, why don't I study about sake? So eventually I went to, you know, visit this guy called Sean, and then eventually I got these ideas about sake. Oh, I didn't know that sake can taste like this. So I had a different perspective about sake afterwards. So I was like, how am I going to create this particular sake listing? I was like, I need more background. So I was like, okay, let's study about this thing. How does it go from there? So eventually when people come into the restaurant, they have this perspective. It's Western, you know. You don't serve any form, like, it's an Asian beverage, let's say, soju, shochu, sake, whatsoever. And then they come in over and they flip over the page and like, you have a full sake list over here. Like, yeah, we know, we work with a lot of, like, producers, a lot of, like, suppliers and so on. Because, like, in terms of, like, sake, like, I always tell you, it's always pretty agile. I think it's the most food-friendliest item that you can get because there's no tannins in it. But these are the things that people don't really understand until you drink it. And then people would always say, you know what, sake has a high ABV, you know, that's the reason why I avoid it. But have you, how much sakes have you tried? It's always the matter of question. So every time we go into a pairing, how do you guys want the pairing to roll in today? Because we don't just do like wine pairing or whatever. So we ask him, are you guys allergic to any form of alcohol? And they're like, you know what, bring it on.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, okay, by all means. And then they're like, what am I drinking? Why is it so good? And then, you know, it's called Nihonshu, like Japanese sake. Well, I didn't know sake can taste like this. I always had the feeling it was all about umami. But I was like telling him, you know what, there's a lot of like new producers right now who's changing the game of what sake is like. So when people come in, it's like, oh God, you know, when I come in over here, I'm going to do a sake pairing next time, but I really like the sake that you pour. You know what? Can I get another bowl of that thing? And I'm going to surprise my friends and so on. Something like that. That's quite an adventure.
Well, you sound like quite the advocate for sake. And, you know, this Sean guy, he must be really, besides being knowledgeable, he must be really good looking at the same time, right?
Well, every time, like, people would tell me, like, you know, I attended a few classes with Sean, and then, you know, he's like so handsome and, you know, he's smart at the same time. You know,
thank you for a shout out.
Get you guys a room.
Thank you for a shout out.
And I was just like, you know what? I'm really sorry, but Sean is married and so on. But you know what? I can sign you up for his fans club and so on. And so on.
You know, with people like that, who needs fans, right? Thank you very much, man. Thank you very much for a shout out. You know, so we've been talking about alcohol this while. What about, you know, there's a trend right now with low and no alcohol, even mocktails. I think I've heard that places like Restaurant Zen,
yeah,
they do a pairing with non-alcoholic drinks. So does it have a place in food pairing in your establishment? What do you think? What's your thoughts?
Well, definitely has a place, I would say. Because like, you'd have a lot of guests who come in over here, and you know what, I can't drink alcohol. Is there anything that you can do for me? And we're like, you know what, we're pretty agile over here, so we can do a lot of things. We have a really good bar program as well. So like, we have a new bartender on board as well, who's like Flavortown, who literally knows every single flavor.
Flavortown.
You're gonna be like, how does it even work, you know? Well, it does work somehow. And then aside from that, you have Non as well. So I don't know if you guys know about this product. So it's like Non 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and so on, which is from Copenhagen. So like, this guy is like developed from Noma. And like, if you don't drink wine, any non-alcoholic beverages, alcoholic beverage, sorry about that, then this is the things for you. Like, it comes in a lot of different flavors and so on, which somehow, how do you say, it's always a little bit more of like a gamble sometimes, because sometimes people either like it or they don't like it from there. But then again, if you tell them like, how is it made, you know, all about, you know, the background and so on, they'll be, okay, you know what, let's give it a try. And then they'll be surprised, like, who would even thought like raspberry and chamomile can work together, which is like opening their eyes and so on. So we're pretty agile over here. If you want to do a mocktail pairing, if you want to do like another non-alcoholic pre-made, let's say, drinks, then we can do something like that as well.
Cool. What about for Nicole's end?
Definitely the same. I think right now, there are two portions of thought. One, on one hand, there are so many amazing brands that have come to the market inspired by Non in the no ABV listing. So we work with things like Muri, as well as definitely Non and Lyra's. And again, we want everyone to join in the fun, even if you're not drinking. You have something in your glass to cheers with your mates and enjoy. And one thing that wakes us a little bit more special at Appetite and Nori is we have not just a very established non-alcoholic drink option from our bar. Wyman is our bar manager, and he makes amazing flavors with a centrifuge just playing around. But we also have a tea list, and this selection is working with very small tea importers based in Singapore. And these guys go pick their own farms, or pick particular farms in China, in Japan, bring those leaves into Singapore, give us the freshest quality or the best aging styles. We've got things like Longting, a 3-year-old Pu'er, and lots of baked white teas. Ivan especially. Ivan, our chef owner, is such a fanatic about tea. Every time I make a tea, he's standing behind my shoulder. I've got a micro scale. I've got two timers next to me. I feel like a chef. But it's really fun because all of it just comes to the end goal of making an amazing experience with your guests.
Wow, that's really hardcore. I mean, waiting down your neck, you know, watching you make tea. But well, one fine day, you're gonna make me tea.
Oh my gosh, hey, let's stop at wine and sake, okay?
I'm a big fan of tea. Well, so you know, one day I'm looking forward to it. Great. So you know, moving away from pairing, why don't let's talk about what do you look for in a distributor or in a brand that will be considered for your list? Because clearly, you know, not everything is for your list. So it'd be cool to just get your insight on that. Nicole, would you like to start first?
It's funny. I think Neil and I were just talking about this, where there are so many distributors in the current market. And of course, competition just makes everyone a lot better. For us at Appetite and Nori, we focus on quality. We want great quality, wherever it's from. Of course, paying homage to the famous bottlers and established winemakers of the world. Everyone knows who they are, and they know who they are. But we also are even more happy to share wines that no one's really heard of that are amazing. For example, just the other day, I was tasting some Macedonian wines and Croatian wines, and those were out of this world, flavors that I didn't even know were in wine.
Wow, Macedonia and Croatia, that's quite unique. What about you, Neil?
Oh, like for me, I mean, almost the same as Nicole, but for me, it's all about the supplier knowing what are they bringing. Because you can always like Google out the products, research about them. But if this particular supplier who comes in over here can tell more about the particular product, I'm more than happy to list it. Because at the end of the day, it's all about the story that's going to sell. Because like for me, if I say, okay, this is a good high quality product, but what's the selling point about it? I have so much high quality products over here. What's going to be unique about it? So I always ask them like a strange question. So I was like, but do you know this guy? Like, what did he do before? Because like at the end of the day, anyone can do this kind of things. I mean, I'm not judging everyone's quality of how they can do products and so on, but for this intermediary to come in over here, you need to know what are you selling? Because a lot of times some suppliers who comes in, they're like, you know, this is a good product, but have you actually tried the product? So these are the things I'm always looking for. Like, I want the guy to come in or the lady who comes in to actually try the product himself and then give their own words about it, which I think is more unique. Because at the end of the day, you know, I can get some ideas from you, get some ideas from what the website says and so on. So it's all about knowing what you have in store and so on.
Yeah. Okay, so being knowledgeable would be one of the key factors.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well guys, remember the couple causes, yeah? right, I do have one last question before I let you guys go.
Yeah.
You know, both of you are kind of like achievers in your own right. So what do you think or hope to accomplish within the next 5 years, whether in terms of your career with you know, your respective establishments or, you know, academic wise? Nicole, take it away.
Thank you. First and foremost, I guess the first goal, and hopefully forever the goal, is to grow and learn with the team, training both the back of house and front of house, and just like being more educated together. And personally, I want to travel. I want to go and experience those wineries. I want to get my hands dirty. I'm still begging Ivan, who's definitely going to listen to this podcast, to let me spend a harvest season either in Australia or Piedmont, just to really understand this trade to the best of its, the best that it has to offer. Also, I think that current guests that are coming into restaurants, because of the past few years of all these restrictions, they are more educated. A lot of people are coming and they go, I've had a level 2 course, I've had a level 1, or just a wine appreciation course. People who are interested in drinking are actually educating themselves. So I think it's our role as sommeliers, beverage directors, or anyone who is a professional in the beverage scene to level up and just constantly be ahead of the game to be able to create experiences and not just be part of the ride.
Sounds like an answer for being a Singapore girl. You know, I want to travel the world and see the world. Yeah.
Well, SQ never hired me. I'm too short.
Well,
but
you know, that's their loss. That's their loss. what about you, Neil?
Well, I'd say like for the next 5 years, probably if I were to think about the company's goals, I want the list to be acknowledged as the best Australian wine list that you can get out there. Because we've been sourcing a lot of things that, how do you say, like wines that you can't find anywhere. So these are the things that we want people to see. Because like when they come in over here, you know, I want to drink Australian wines, but you know, I can't find this, I can't find that. But when they come into to Bernan's, this is where I go. You know, like this, it has every single thing. It's like the Australian dream. But I'm not trying to sell dreams over here, but then again, I've had a couple guests.
We all are.
Exactly.
Who comes in and is like, you know what, this is a dream seller. I would like to sleep over to you. So, you know what, be my guest and, you know, stay over for the night, you know, and smell those balls, whatever, and so on. But yeah, but for myself, I'm probably going to open my own, let's say, probably wine bar, whatever.
Wow.
Create an own concept where it's a little bit more fun. I want to create more of like, how do you say, an experience as well. I mean, it doesn't have to be too expensive or whatsoever, but I want it to be really approachable to get more people into wine. Like, not only to wine, but let's say cocktail wines, like, or whatsoever, just to open up their mind. Because, like, in Hong Kong, there's a lot of these things. So, like, for example, they didn't, a lot of them were not into sake. And then this guy, Elliot, I don't know if you guys know him.
Yep.
So, he's like one of the sake samurais all over, I say, in Japan. And then he was the guy who started this sake revolution in Hong Kong.
Mm.
It was the first time I tried sake on time. And I was like, whoa. I didn't know like these things can taste like this and so on, but I was like, you know, I want to do something like this, you know, to create experience, to create a story more than just a product that you have. But yeah, it's a dream, but who knows, maybe Sean will give me a chance one day.
You know? Why don't you give me a chance instead? Yeah, well, like it's you know, it's good to dream big, and I think and I hope, actually I hope that both of you accomplish that eventually.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think with that it's a good time to wrap up our this month's episode. So here's a quick shout out to check out our website schedules for our beverage certification programs. They are running monthly. Also, have you figured out the answer to the sake flashcard question? I'm sure most of you studious sake students know this. The answer is to cultivate yeast population. So if you'd like to listen to more of such drinks content, please do remember to follow and subscribe to our channel. And I look forward to seeing you at the next episode. And remember, a drink always tastes better when the company clicks. Kanpai! Cheers!
Alright, cheers to that, right?